We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Mully and Hall.
Fantastic, fantastic show.
Chicago Sports Talk for your morning.
Oh, man, I really wanted to talk to him.
Appreciate the love, big homie.
You look at where the Cubs are at now, we don't know who's here and who's gone. I hate to bring it up again because I think we're trying to ignore it, but there are a lot of guys left on this team from the great World Series victory whose future is clouded. Now, Jock Peterson is the guy that's playing for a contract. I understand that. But, David, goodness gracious, we don't know who's here long-term or who's leaving or what's going to happen. And every time they lose a game, it kind of goes through your head, oh, they got to keep winning. What are you doing? You better keep winning, because if you don't, and God knows, you know, you need to win series against the Brewers. I know it's one game, but doesn't that always infect the conversation? Not effect, but infect?
Our conversation, I suppose, it's got to be on the back burner. It's got to be the backdrop in the context for everything that goes on this year. But if you are the Cubs, that's got to be out of sight, out of mind. You can't consider the future implications to the point where it distracts and takes away from the present. And that's always the danger when you're talking about teams and players and coaches entering contract years, lame duck seasons, if you will. That's what we're looking at with the Bears. That's a different conversation. That's what we're dealing with the Cubs, with some of their core players. But I don't know that after every game you have to evaluate what it means for the future of Anthony Rizzo, or after every start if somebody is in that situation. I think it's natural to look ahead, but I just think that's almost counterproductive for these players to look at it that way. So they've got to try to find a way to have this sort of tunnel vision. And it doesn't help, I guess, suppose, when that is the backdrop for every conversation in regard to Javi Baez, in regard to Chris Bryant, and Anthony Rizzo to maybe a larger degree.
Mike Mulligan and David Hall taking you up to 9 o'clock on 670 The Score.
Okay, let's go.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. It is a glorious and wondrous Thursday in the fine city of Chicago, and we have bad baseball news. Just losing teams yesterday, kind of a bummer. The Cubs have a great performance from Kyle Hendricks, and they wind up losing in the 10th inning, David, and it was a little bit depressing.
Morning, Molly. Happy Thursday. Yeah, yesterday the good news was the Cubs and Sox both played afternoon games, so we didn't have to stay up late. The bad news is if you had a weak stomach, it ruined your dinner, because both teams and games, that was hard to watch. I mean, the Cubs anemic offensively, that is, you know, kind of become the norm. The White Sox, not sure what's happened to the bullpen, but both games, very, very difficult.
You know, what's really extraordinary is the Cubs, all, you know, the last four games, they just can't hit for their lives. And I think that sometimes the trend is your friend. And unfortunately, when they can't hit in the fashion in which they have not been hitting, it reminds you that they haven't hit in a while, David. They haven't been able to hit. Somebody said that, I don't know who said it on Twitter, it almost feels like a playoff game the way they're not hitting. And that is just a really indictment of a comment, because we've seen them struggle in the postseason when they've gotten there, and I don't know. This doesn't look good. This is not a good look for a way to end a series.
It just looks all too familiar when you see, you know, Javi swinging from his back foot and wildly missing, and you see Chris Bryant frozen at the plate, and you see that look of chagrin on Anthony Rizzo's face. Is it 2021, six games into a season, or is it the playoffs in 2018 or 2019 or last year, for goodness sakes, when against the Marlins, when you saw all that frustration? The Cubs are pressing. It's very early in the season. We can debate, and we will talk about, you know, when is it become the time to start to consider some changes in the lineup, or how patient are you with the team that when they struggle, they do look very familiar, and we've seen all this before because it's the same guy struggling.
And you mentioned the White Sox. I mean, they had that game in a really good spot, and then all of a sudden they go into the sixth inning and Matt Foster comes out to bail out Dallas Keuchel, and they just – Tony La Russa, I got to tell you, I know the man knows more about bullpens and pitching than I'll ever be able to understand. But when a guy takes a 4-1 lead to 8-4 the other way, don't you at some point think about, hey, maybe this isn't working so well? How do you keep the guy in for eight batters when you have the option to take him out after the first three?
What did Matt Foster do to Tony La Russa? Oh. I mean, did he spill coffee on him or something? Did he insult him? Did he not laugh at his joke? Because that was – the longer that went on, you wondered what point is he trying to prove here? Why is he doing this? You know, Foster, after the 11-pitch walk, I think it was to France, that was quite an at-bat, right? And then he stayed in to face Seager. I don't understand. I don't think anybody did.
Who beat them all night.
Well, he did. He had quite a day. Yeah. And to La Russa's credit, what did you think about him owning it afterward and saying, you know what, that was lousy, that was all the things that everyone was thinking he was saying about himself after the game? At least he owned it.
Well, I mean, that's great. Only, unfortunately, some of us were saying it within the inning. And I can't tell you how confounding that was to me. How much I didn't understand what he was doing and how awful it was to see this go on and on and on. And, you know, Dallas Keuchel had a decent game. Maybe he didn't have his greatest stuff, but he was doing fine. And when he came out of the game, he had only allowed a run. Now, two more scored. There were men on second and third. But goodness gracious, that was awful. That was just a terrible thing to observe. Not add to that the fact that Tim Anderson is now on the 10-day DL, and Billy Hamilton grabbed a hamstring himself. So yes, we know he got bitten as well. The hamstring biting is going on, and oh my gosh, it was just so to have the sweep in your hands and just throw it away for no apparent reason. Other than, is this guy still out there? Did you forget he was out on the mound? Did you forget you could take him out? I don't know what happened.
Even Mother Nature hates the White Sox. It's going to rain all day, Molly. It's going to rain all day on the home opener out at the Guaranteed Rate Field. Although, you know what? There could be worse things than the White Sox having a day off.
That's true.
You hate to ruin all the ceremony, the anticipation, and all the things that come with, you know, a home opener. Maybe they can hit reset, but at the same time, if they can't get this one in, it would not be the worst thing in the world for a bullpen that has had a really bad first week and a team that, after all these games on the West Coast and Seattle and Anaheim, probably could benefit from a breather. So I would not I think the weather forecast calls for between 70% and 80% chance of rain. Well, you know, If they want to call it early, I'm not sure that Tony La Russa would mind or should mind, because it might be the best thing for him.
Oh, boy. It's just it's really something else, man. The Bulls are at the Raptors tonight before they go off on a five-game road trip. Bulls players received the COVID-19 vaccine sources told The Athletic when they got back before they get going here. So that's pretty good, right? I mean, are we feeling happy about this?
I think so. You know, you watch the side effects. You don't want anybody to do something there. You know, you can't force it on them, I don't believe. So as long as they were comfortable doing it, it's the smart and right thing to do in a lot of people's opinions. Yeah, sure. That's good to hear. There's a uniformity. Everybody, all for one, one for all.
DePaul officially announced the hiring of Tony Stubblefield as the new head coach and the men's basketball team, obviously. And he will join us today at 7:20. We'll get a chance to talk to Tony.
Yeah, we should talk to that guy. We should just see what he's all about.
It's
College Basketball Coaches Week here with new College Coaches Week. Drew Valentine yesterday. That was a good conversation.
I agree.
Then Tony Stubblefield today. It was, I don't know that we know a lot about him necessarily in Chicago. It was a surprise choice, you know, giving him the benefit of the doubt of an open mind. So let's hear what he has to say. And, I guess the press conference yesterday was okay. Okay, right?
Yeah, it was all right.
Yeah, it was all right.
I mean, I don't know what to say. I did hear it, and I did it was okay. We'll get more information hopefully today. The Blackhawks host the Stars again tonight. The trade deadline is right around the corner, so that's kind of interesting. And, of course, the Hawks now have officially purchased the Rockford IceHawks. That's been their AHL affiliate since 2007. I guess two-thirds of the NHL own their own team, their own top affiliate, so it's good for the Blackhawks to jump into that. They announced like a $23 million renewal of the stadium the IceHawks play, and they're going to pour money into it, which is always a good sign.
Yeah, I think they have a good agreement with Rockford there, and the fact that it's becoming more the norm for teams to own their affiliates like that makes a lot of sense. So Rocky and Danny Wirtz, they stepped up, and it's going to be $11.8 million investment over the next 9 years. And they want to get more involved in the community. So Rocky and Danny were over in Rockford yesterday along with the governor and made a big thing about it. So good for the Hawks.
The Masters tees off this morning. First group goes off at 7 a.m. Dustin Johnson is the favorite at 9-1. Justin Thomas is 10-1. Jordan Spieth getting a lot of momentum. He's at 11-1, and so is Bryson DeChambeau. So
he's
we'll
hot
see.
After a long drought. Jordan Spieth, he is. Seems like it's odd because the Masters just got done. Basically, it seems back in November, right? That was. Seems like it just ended.
We're changing the schedule. We're back on schedule. There was a word yesterday that Tiger Woods, that the excessive speed was likely the cause of his accident. He apparently was driving between 84 and 87 miles an hour in a 45-mile-an-hour zone at the time of the crash. And it was speed alone was ruled the cause. That is a, if you remember seeing the way they had mocked up the road and showed everything at the time of the accident. Apparently, you're going kind of downhill and you're going faster than you think to begin with. And when you're speeding, that would explain how his car went out of control and he rolled it and all the rest of it. So again, Tiger recovering, and you always think about him when it comes to Masters time, but apparently he was at fault for speeding in that 45-mile-an-hour zone.
Reportedly going 75 at the moment of impact, so he's fortunate to be alive. He's fortunate that nobody else was hurt by him going that fast. And, that's 84 to 87 miles per hour in a 45 zone. Wow.
It's been fascinating to watch what's going on with Deshaun Watson, with the sexual assault allegations from the various masseuses that have come forward, and I believe it is up to 22 women. Nike has suspended their endorsement deal with Deshaun Watson, and Beats by Dre has dropped Deshaun Watson. That is when the corporate sponsors start bailing, David, that is a sign that this is a very – I mean, listen, it's all, we always take these things very seriously, but, you know, it's a sign that public opinion has turned and that the player is in serious trouble when you start seeing the sponsors jump off. So that is bad for Deshaun Watson.
In today's professional sports world, that's about as loud of a statement as you can make, that something's wrong here. And yep. I think we kind of sense that. The press conference the other day with the accusers, a couple of accusers who were filing lawsuits, that was disturbing to hear. The story keeps getting worse. It threatens to become one of the biggest offseason stories, if not the biggest, in the NFL because of who he is and who we thought he was. And this is just is a bad situation continuing to get worse. And, you know, the Texans are sort of, as a franchise, have to be held captive by this entire episode because there's not much they can do. Because aside from this, then the other stuff about him being unhappy with the organization, which doesn't even matter yet because this incident saga, really ugly episode, takes precedent.
No question about it. And the other news, and I hate to even bring this up, but Russell Wilson in the news. Warren Moon predicts that there will be a divorce between the Seahawks and their Pro Bowl quarterback. You're not going to drag me back into this, are you?
Why do you hate to bring it up?
Oh, because I can't deal with disappointment. I just can't deal with more disappointment on the Russell Wilson front.
Why are you the enemy of fantasy?
Come on. I am the enemy of fantasy. Thank you. That is because I think maybe it's fantasy. Maybe okay. We all got burned once. I'm a little shy about it.
I get it. I know.
I don't want to touch that stove.
I know. I understand. Plus, they already have QB1. So why would they go after QB3?
Well, because QB1 probably is QB3, and QB3 would be QB1. All right, we'll get into all of it. We've got the 5 at 5 next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
Is the Cubs offense broken? How do you explain a 10-inning game in which they managed 3 hits and struck out 12 times? Do you think they just can't solve Brandon Woodruff after a 1-for-22 performance followed a 1-for-22 last September?
Yeah, that may be as simple as that. They just struggled with the pitching, and they were thrown by it. It's just this is happening too often, and averaging 3 hits a game is pretty miserable, and there isn't one player that is hot, so there isn't one guy that can carry the lineup. And I think that as you kind of watch different guys in key situations, you just wonder, well, you know, Ian Happ last year was a guy that kind of got it done for him and when everybody else was cold. And, you know, I don't know. There were a couple of situations in that game where you just needed one good at bat and you weren't getting it. And it's really tough to watch a team that can't hit and won't hit for whatever reason. You know, I remember all three hits. It was that kind of game. They stand out in your mind. You know, Happ breaking up the no-hitter and Jock Peterson with a home run. And I think it was Jay Hay that actually got a hit. So that's wondrous. I got to tell you, I know that Peterson said afterward that it's going to be a lot of fun when they get going, but feel free to get going.
Yeah, exactly, because they aren't going anywhere except for down, down, down. They're hitting 124 as a team. There's no team in baseball that's off to a worse start offensively than the Cubs. And when you look at that lineup individually, you think that can't be possible. Collectively, they stink. And it's a continuation of a problem. Yes, it remains broken. It was broken. I forget what season that was, but 2018, they get to the playoffs. No, 2019, they miss them, and it's the same reason why. 2020, hey, we're back in the playoffs, but no, we're not going to be able to hit in the postseason because we don't hit in the postseason. And here we are again, six games in. They have 21 hits and 169 at-bats as a team, and they've struck out 60 times already. 19 runs in the first week of the season. You got to hit reset. You got to start over. It's a very long season. It's a very long season. We'll continue to hear that. I'm not quite sure what the answer is. We've talked about, you know, being more selfish at the plate, as David Ross has put it. We've talked about a lot of different approaches that you want to change. They just can't seem to get it right. And I don't know if you start mixing up the lineup already just to get a spark so you don't show any sign of stress. You don't want to start pressing too much this soon. It's the equivalent of the third quarter of the first NFL game. That's where we are in this season. So if the Bears had a hard time running the football and couldn't move the ball on the ground in the first half against the Packers in week one, what would you want them to do in the third quarter? Would they abandon their game plan? Maybe. I don't know. They might start throwing the ball. So is this time to have Anthony Rizzo lead off? Do you want to try something else just to mix things up, the order, and to see a different approach? You know what? There are no wrong answers in the name of innovation or finding creative solutions. So whatever they decide to do, I think that you'd probably understand it because, you know what? They're hitting 124.
Strikeout, walk, or home run. Strikeout, walk, or home run. That's what they do. They strike out, they walk, or they homer. And that's not good baseball all around. And that number you just put out there, David, is the most damning number. 124. They're batting 124, and they've had how many games against the Pirates, right? I mean, again, that's the team you should be feasting on, right? And it was ace versus ace yesterday. You can kind of, sort of, maybe live with that, but it's the approach. It's how they go up and take their at-bats. David Ross the other day talked about he's not going to get on this roller coaster and he's not going for the ride, and he basically pulled the old Aaron Rodgers out of his back pocket, and I felt like what he was telling us without saying it directly was R-E-L-A-X.
Yep.
Relax. I don't want to relax. I don't want to relax. Baseball is here. I'm excited about it. The Cubs opened up at home against the Pirates and the Brewers, who most Cub fans hate. It's not time to relax. Ian Happ basically said, oh, we're going to be just fine. We're going to be – when? Here's the key question. If you guys can find this out at some point during the show, and if our listeners want to weigh in, whoever, when? When is it time to panic? When is it time to realize that the roller coaster is going – this way instead of climbing and not sure how fast it's going to go on the way down? What's that magic number? How long, when they're batting under 100? They're batting 124 right now. So how about this? After this weekend in Pittsburgh, will they be above 200? Will the team batting average be above 200? Maybe our friends at Rivers could make a Mully bet. Maybe we can get a Mully bet over at Rivers.
Wait,
Cubs be over 200 by the time they get back?
They got three games in Pittsburgh.
Well, they're your bets. I mean, Rivers likes you the most.
Yeah, well, call it a Mully bet.
I think four. Yeah.
Don't drag me into it.
Yeah, three games because Friday they're not playing Friday, right?
They're playing Friday, right? They got another Friday off in Pittsburgh, so I think there's probably a three game series in Pittsburgh. So how many? I'm trying to do the math here because the back of the napkin.
Can they raise it 75 points, David?
I'll work on that.
I'm just saying. At what point do you panic?
No, They
at what point do you panic?
That's going to be a heck of a heck of a weekend if they're going to hit 200 after going in hitting 124 collectively.
But he's right in that if they have one huge game, they could really raise that up. It's very early. That's your point.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a great question, and it differs for every guy.
Did Kyle Hendricks deserve better after holding the Brewers in check for six innings of four-hit baseball? Should he have pitched the seventh after hitting 87 pitches through six?
Well, you know, if you do, if you go backward, you could make the argument that they took out Kyle Hendricks too long because you brought in Millsy, who gave up the homer, right? And then you thought, well, if you got one more inning out of Hendricks, and who was looking pretty sharp, and I thought he had a really strong outing. That was the Kyle Hendricks we are used to seeing. But at the point they took him out, I was, I guess, a little surprised that after 85 pitches, I thought he might have come back. You bring in Mills, gives up the homer, and I maybe it forced you to go to Kimbrel an inning earlier, because after Kimbrel left, he threw 12 pitches. I thought that was okay. If you're going to bring him in a tie game, it's because you're going to try to get two innings out of him. No, well, because you're going to bring in Workman to replace Kimbrel, and then that's when things got away from you. So I don't know if you could make the argument, but you do wonder if Hendricks would have gone one more inning, what that would have done to the matchups and what that might have done to the success of the bullpen. So I it did cross my mind. I think, Molly, you know, we were texting and wondering and if this was the right move at the time, and I think it backfired on him. I understand the logic. I understand that if Kyle Hendricks was done and you wanted to have him go out on a positive, he looked sharp. He looked like the guy you needed him to be. That was a tremendous pitching matchup between Woodruff and Hendricks for six innings, seven innings, and Woodruff was dealing as well. But, yeah, I think it did cross my mind, got to be honest. So, and he absolutely deserved better after he threw like he did. But you're not going to win many games when you can't have an offense that can score any runs.
I honestly was confounded by it. I didn't understand. I thought for sure the professor had another inning in him. Maybe he was starting to struggle, but he was pitching well, and I thought you could leave him in. He'd thrown 87 pitches. I thought for sure. It was 10 pitches, right, for Kimbrel. So I thought, you're bringing him in, you're going to win the game, and if he has to come back, he can come back for that last inning, right? Wasn't that the kind of point of the whole thing?
I was surprised
because he did not throw very many pitches, and he was unbelievably efficient. So I thought, wow, you know, that's excellent. They're going to use him for two here. They really want to win this game. I don't understand it, frankly. I wasn't sure what the thinking was all the way around, but I'm with you. When you start moving backward rather than looking kind of as to what was next, I think you could pinpoint that as a real change in what happened in that game. And frankly, if you left Hendricks in for another inning and then he gave up the home run, maybe we'd have a different conversation. We'd talk about, well, he had pitched 87. Why, you know, what are you trying to overwork him for? So I want to be fair about it, but I didn't understand that at all, frankly. Maybe it's as simple as you got a pitcher that does kind of have a little voodoo on you, and you got to just kind of accept that for one game. But this isn't a one-game issue when we talk about the Cubs' offense.
No, and I think that's part of the answer to the question is the Cubs' offense is the reason that I think Ross pulled Hendricks. I don't think he thought on that day they were going to be able to make any kind of a comeback. I think that's really the underlying factor there. Kyle Hendricks did everything he could to put the Cubs in position to win that game. His teammates, the offense, let him down. After the game, Kyle Hendricks said all the right things. Those guys in there are great. We're going to snap out of it. They're going to deliver. Today I just did what I could do. I have complete faith in them. All of that stuff. He said all the right things. And of course, if you move everything back a little bit, right?
Yeah.
If he goes one more, Kimbrel goes one more. We were having a group text. Can Kimbrel go? You know, can Kimbrel go two? Maybe. But again, I think David Ross kind of just said, forget it. We're not going to win this game. There's no reason for me to put an extra inning or two on Kyle Hendricks. You know, here's the other thing. Kyle Hendricks felt really bad the other day. I think he felt really bad after opening day. And now he should have felt a lot better. And so if he had gone the one more inning, if he had given up another home run or whatever had happened, Mully, then I think all of a sudden now he's got two starts in a row where things aren't going his way. So I think there's something to be said about that, is getting the guy out when he can feel good, and you know that another inning, the only bad thing that can happen is him go the wrong direction. Now he's got two bad starts in a row.
Makes sense. Hey, I got an answer for your question in the previous Cubs-related question here, and before we get off the Cubs. So it's, if the Cubs were to finish the weekend against the Pirates with a 200 collective batting average, as you suggest, okay, right now they are 21 as a team, 21 hits, 169 at-bats, they're hitting 124. They got 33 at-bats as a team yesterday. Let's say they get 100 at-bats in Pittsburgh, three games, 33, let's say estimate 100 at-bats. If they get 100 at-bats in Pittsburgh over those three games, they would have to have 33 hits in those 100 at-bats to get up to 200 when they leave town. So they would have to hit collectively 333 as a team against the Pirates in three games after going in hitting 124. Impossible? No. Tall order, 11 hits per game for this offense? Maybe.
You'd get really good odds from Rivers on that.
Mully odds.
Mully odds.
Don't track me into it.
I'm struggling.
Hey, listen, you're the one who predicted Jock Peterson home run yesterday.
That's right.
So come on.
He did. You're on a roll, man. You got Baylor beating Gonzaga, and you got Jock Peterson homering. So this is the time to bet on whatever Mully says.
Neither of those things were outrageous predictions, right? It would be like predicting, let's see.
It's going to rain today.
No, it might rain. No, Jason Hayward's going to strike out. I think that was as easily predicted.
Now that's mean spirited.
That's mean. That's just mean.
Jock's 1-for-17 right now. He got one home run. You predicted he's 1-for-17.
He was two.
I'm struggling how to answer that one.
Oh boy.
Why was White Sox reliever Matt Foster left in the game to face eight batters over 34 pitchers in a disastrous sixth inning? How do you let a 4-1 lead turn into an 8-4 deficit? What does Tony La Russa know that we don't?
I don't think he knows a lot that we don't, basically, based on that one decision. That was so frustrating. I mean, look, Matt Foster came into a tough situation. But didn't you feel bad for Dallas Keuchel? Okay, you leave a couple guys on base, and this guy comes in, and, you know, frankly, all of a sudden your ERA is bloated because he can't get an out. And the eight players that went to that, I could not believe. That was just, I mean, honestly, it was irresponsible. I mean, it was criminal to leave the guy in the game till the point where you had to take him out. Like, okay, well, oh, really? So it's not going to work. So he's not going to get out of the inning, and it's now 8-4. All right, well, let's do something. Oh, that just confounded me. And I get it. That was the end of the game, and that was it. The White Sox they had so many opportunities early in that game. They could have gotten 15 runs. I mean, they were getting walked all over the place. How many times did they walk? It was 8 or 9 times early on in that game. The guy walked in a run, and you finally get to a point where you're sitting there, and you think, okay, this is a nice lead. Get to the bullpen. You're going to be laughing. And Matt Foster, he didn't have it. It was very obvious. And I couldn't believe that he was left to face eight batters. How in the name of God have you ever seen that? I get it. The rules have changed. He's got to face three. But those last five, that's kind of where the problem was.
Yeah, you want to be careful here, but I'll say this. If you were wondering about Tony La Russa's ability to to adapt and to adjust and to still manage at the level that he was when he was a Hall of Fame manager after this long of a layoff. Yesterday shook your confidence. Yesterday shook your confidence in all the things that have been said about his ability to stay sharp and his ability to make the right move. And boy, this is the guy that invented the bullpen, so of course he knows what buttons to push. He couldn't find it yesterday. I mean, did Matt Foster take his seat on the team bus? This was ridiculous. Matt Foster was in there. The sixth hitter he faced was Ty France. It was a good battle, 11 pitches, but it was a walk. At that point, you're like, okay, Tony, wake up. Let's go. Someone else. To leave him in, Kyle Seager, that wasn't even a good matchup from percentage standpoint. That was indefensible. So, of course, afterward, Tony La Russa falls on his sword. I pushed Foster too far. Just stupid, lousy, no excuse. Nobody argued. Nobody argued with that. I wonder how many people in that clubhouse wonder or were wondering at the time, what are you doing, Skip? What are you doing? I thought you were the guy that was supposed to have all the right answers, that you were the guy that was supposed to create credibility as a manager and to replace a guy who we started to doubt and question, and the guy in the linebacker stance that made everybody uncomfortable during the playoffs. Where's that guy? Where's Tony La Russa, genius? So when this happens early in the season, you don't want to overreact, but all those things run through your head because you did wonder about the, you know, just where is this going to take the White Sox in terms of how quick is he going to respond in game. Yesterday, he didn't respond at all until it was too late, and that was, as he said, in his words, stupid, lousy, and inexcusable.
Well, I hope those aren't words that we're using throughout the rest of the season with both sides of town. Let's just start there. It almost felt like from the lineup, like the Sox either thought that they could win because they were facing a lefty pitcher, so they thought that that trend was on their side, so it really didn't matter what kind of lineup they threw out there. They're going to beat that lefty starter. And or let's just get ready for opening day. It's very hard to sweep teams. They had already taken, they were guaranteed to win that series against Seattle. They won that series against Seattle. But you went out west and you stumbled against the Angels. You didn't take that series. You didn't even split that series. You went 1-for-3. And if anything, it was like he left Foster out there to say, I don't think too much of Foster. I'm not going to use Foster this weekend against the Royals. I don't want to burn anybody up that I want to use against the Royals. But it's almost like he forgot the fact that they have Friday off. So they have Friday off, and today could get washed out, and then you wouldn't have Friday off, obviously, assuming it doesn't rain on Friday as well. But it was almost like he just conceded, and he just said, okay, listen, Matt Foster's going to wear it. So I almost wish he would have said that after the game than falling on the sword, because I think that just creates this avalanche and makes it even weak. We know it was bad, but him falling on the sword, I think, actually makes the whole situation even worse. And with that lineup, you're always in a game. You're always in a game with that lineup, and you're playing Seattle, who you should beat all the time.
But as you point out, that lineup was pretty odd.
But you could, I mean, but at that point, you could pinch hit. I'm saying at that point, you could pinch. You were still in the game. You still had a chance. You're never completely out of it. I think they got fat and happy on the fact that we're facing a left-hander. We always beat left-handers.
Well, no, Justin Dunn's right-handed. I think you had a lineup in there that was very unusual to begin with, and then you made a decision that made it even harder to win that related to your pitching. You went into this game thinking you were going to obviously scratch out enough runs and then somehow hold a lead. What he did, it was made it impossible to hold the lead or to be competitive because Foster was done.
Correct. Impossible. You had no chance then, right? That seven spot, no way. Mm-mm.
That is an unbelievably great question.
What did you think of Tony Stubblefield's introductory news conference? Do you believe he will build a champion at DePaul? Are the Blue Demons back as Chicago's team?
Wow, that seems pretty bold and ambitious. No. I mean, if we're going to ask yes, no questions, no. They're not back as Chicago's team. Chicago's team? I thought we had the coach of Chicago's team yesterday, Loyola. In all seriousness, Tony Stubblefield has a lot of ground to cover, and I think number one, he's got to create he's got to answer the question that's going on in people's minds as they kind of pay attention to this story. And the biggest one is, who's Tony Stubblefield? And what's he doing in Chicago? They couldn't get somebody that has some sort of geographic tie, some sort of tie to the school, some sort of tie to the athletic director, for goodness sakes. I thought they were going to get a Cal guy, not an Oregon guy, not a Pac-12 guy. I understand he's a good recruiter. Maybe he will bring big-time talent to Chicago. He said all the things that you would expect a new DePaul coach to say at the introductory press conference. The only thing he didn't say, or the only thing that he said that I didn't expect, is that you don't typically hear coaches thank the founder of Nike early on in this press conference, but he did thank Phil Knight. Tony Stubblefield has a tremendous challenge because DePaul basketball isn't where it needs to be. But as I listened to him talk yesterday, fair or not, I felt like he was sort of an outsider coming into this Chicago basketball culture, the Big East, the city, all the things that he said about needing to recruit and stay local. I think we've heard it before. I think we heard it from Oliver Purnell. I know we heard it from Dave Lado, who had a little bit better sense of it after coming back a second time. But I don't know that you heard anything from Tony Stubblefield that surprised you. And I think that when you have introductory press conferences, you want to be surprised. You want to be moved. You want to have something to react to. And I'm not sure that, it was fine, but it wasn't much more than that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm looking forward to our conversation with him. I don't know Tony Stubblefield, and I'm going to be interested to get his take on things. There's a lot of kind of weird pie in the sky going on at DePaul. I mean, they keep talking about what they once were and getting back there, and there's a lot of ambition, and boy, we're going to win and everyone's going to get on board and we're going to be the centerpiece of Chicago again. They were dead last in the Big East in 11 of the last 13 seasons. I mean, before you get to championship, you got to get to competitive. And, we literally wonder whether they belong in that conference because they've had such a difficult time playing against those teams. And they've been such an also-ran. It's been rough. It's been rough to kind of get behind DePaul basketball for a long time here. Now, the priority seems to have been, who's the best recruiter in the country? Let's go get that guy. And, when you heard Dwayne Peavy talk about his background and how Kentucky managed to get recruits, Kentucky was part of the one-and-done brigade, right? They became this national program because they could bring in unbelievably talented players that were just on a way stop on the way to the NBA. Is that what this is? Is that what the idea is? I'm just really curious. There's nothing wrong with that if that's how you want to run your program. I'm just curious. Are they going to bring in guys that you watch for more than 1 year? Are they going to bring in guys that you watch develop as a team? Or is it all just about bringing in a guy and let's see, roll the ball out and see if the guys can play and how well they can play, and then we'll do the same thing next year? So it's just a different way of approaching it, in my opinion, and I'm going to be fascinated to get a chance to talk to Tony about that. And he's, by all accounts, an excellent recruiter. So I don't think the issue is going to be bringing players in. I think it's going to be, are they staying here? Is this a program you get your teeth into? Or kind of a, oh, my God, look at this guy. Come out and watch him play for a year on the way to the NBA. I would like to know what the plan is.
The bar is so low right now, as you pointed out, Molly, that they can only go up. I think competitive in 2 years would be the first goal. Making it to the final weekend of the Big East tournament, they start a little earlier than most conferences. Like, winning two games in the Big East tournament would be like year three goal. I could only hope, as a fan of DePaul growing up and as a, my parents were season ticket holders. I wasn't. I just got to go to the games back in the day. You could only hope that DePaul was attracting one and dones. Please, please bring one and dones to DePaul. That's fine. It's fine with me because who's the last DePaul guy in the last 10 years that went to the NBA who ever did anything in the NBA?
Max Strus.
It's hard to – who?
Played.
Strus is on the loose down in Miami.
You know what? I'm just saying. Like,
I'm just saying.
Yeah, it's hard. It's not a very long list. You know, we talked about using – right. Listen, if he can get 3-1 and done guys in here, sure. Listen, let's see it happen. Because nobody else has been able to do that. He's got
it's a, just not, a different he, type of program can, is what I'm saying, Dustin. You know what I mean?
Well, I think it's a great question. Listen.
Yeah.
It's a great question, and I know you guys are going to push and get that answer. I can't wait for the interview. I grew up on DePaul. I'd like DePaul to be good. But right now, I'm much more interested in Loyola than I am in DePaul.
It's an excellent question.
Who is your pick to win the Masters? How do you explain Jordan Spieth suddenly gaining momentum? Why or why not Dustin Johnson?
Yeah, I mean, people are talking about Dustin Johnson possibly being able to win back-to-back. It's kind of a difficult thing to do. But, I think that as I look at this, I think I like Justin Thomas to win the Masters. And it's just based on, you know, the profile of what a Masters champion is and the guys that I have followed and like and who I believe is hot at the moment. And I think Justin Thomas is my pick for the tournament. I think that, it's been a little bit of a cold stretch for Jordan Spieth, who came up and looked like he was going to win everything always. By all means, a good dude and a very polite person and not a bad guy in any sense. So I think that people cheer for someone like that. But since I have to make a pick, I'm going to go with Justin Thomas. I think it's hard for me to pick Dustin Johnson just because I think it's really difficult to win this thing back to back. So that's what I think.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. But I'm going to go with the hot hand or the hot putter or the hot golfer, and I maybe it's more out of you want him to win more than you think he will win. But Jordan Spieth is at least on a little bit of a roll. He's gone through a really tough patch, and he's trying to find his way out of that rut. And he does play well at Augusta, or he has in the past. He is playing well of late, so he comes in a little bit hot. It may be a bit of a stretch, and the odds don't necessarily favor him. But I like his chances. He's ranked 53, I think, right now in the world. So I know that's a long shot. But you got to pick somebody, and I think Dustin Johnson might be, that's a good choice. I just want to go against the grain maybe, and I'm tempted to go with somebody else. But, okay, Jordan Spieth. I would say Jordan Spieth will win at Augusta this weekend.
You know, Augusta's all about the stories, right? The come from behinds, the guys that have won it in the past. Some guys always seem to be able to make the cut. Like a Freddie Couples, right? Now, Freddie Couples isn't going to win this thing. But if Freddie Couples makes the cut, what's going on with Phil Mickelson? Is Phil Mickelson closer to sitting next to Jim Nance and talking about the Masters? Or is he closer to making the cut and being in contention come Sunday? Bubba Watson, this course always seems to set up for the left-handers, and Bubba's won it. So is that something? He hasn't done much lately. But it really is becoming a younger man's game. It really, really is. And I'm going to go with Colin Morikawa. A lot of people probably don't know him, but if you've watched a lot of golf this year, he has had a really great year. He idolizes Tiger. He's hitting the ball better than anybody else on tour by like a full stroke. If you follow each week in and out, he's just a very steady, good, young player. And he's 30-1. If that does anything for you, if you're making your prediction based on price and what kind of money you can get back, but there's nothing, it's fantastic. It's just, it's a fantastic thing to sit down and watch. And if it's going to rain all weekend here in the Chicagoland area, get your popcorn and get on the couch, maybe an iced tea or an Arnold Palmer, and just sit down and watch golf all weekend. It's fantastic. I love it. I've been lucky enough to be down there. It's just a great, great event, and it's so much fun to watch.
Absolutely. All right, we've got our picks. Let's let the money fly. Well, that's not. Let's let the golf balls fly. Will
I'm just second guessing myself because you have made so many other good predictions this week. I think I just wanted to follow suit, but maybe we'll go against
that's
the grain.
That's a fair prediction. I'm a little out there on my own, but that's okay. You know how you just like a guy, like the way he's playing at that moment, and former world number one hasn't been great. Alabama. I like the guy. I think he's from Louisville, so he must know something about horse racing. I just picked him. Okay, that should be fun. It'll be fun to have, a horse in the race. Huh? Yeah. All right. 312-644-6767. What do you make of the Cubs? Is the offense broken? Is it too early to determine that? Are you waiting for the big party? Is it going to be fun to get on the bandwagon, as Jock Peterson believes? Why in the name of God was Matt Foster left to rot on the vine yesterday for the White Sox? Kyle Hendricks deserved better yesterday. Did you watch that game and think that's not fair, what that poor guy's going through? Who watched Tony Stubblefield? Are you pumped up for DePaul basketball? Do you remember DePaul basketball? Not of recent vintage, but way back in the Wayback Machine, back when DePaul used to be able to tap into some great local players. And are we off on the Masters? Who's your pick? 312-644-6767. Mully and Hall on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.